Hello and welcome to the Hayloft Hour. I am your host Jordan, otherwise known as Spotted Bay Productions. I have been viewing the world through the ears of a horse since I was 2 years old, and this podcast is my attempt at uncovering the dark side of the equine industry, true crime, scandals, and horror stories that might otherwise stay locked away in the hayloft forever. My purpose is to make these stories well known so that we can make sure that they never happen again, and to let others who may find themselves in these situations know that they are not alone. Make sure to join us on social media to follow my daily life with my two horses. You can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, all at Spotted Bay Productions. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe wherever you listen and share it with your friends. If you have an episode suggestion or a personal story that you would like to submit, email it to me at spottedbay@gmail.com or submit it on spottedbay.com, but please leave out the personal info and just leave behind the juicy details. In today's episode, we will be covering horror stories submitted by my Instagram followers that have been sent into my email. I haven't read any of these yet, so we will get to experience them together. There may be uncomfortable topics in these stories, so please proceed with caution and feel free to skip ahead or exit the episode if a topic arises about which you're not comfortable listening, and we will catch you in the next episode. I also just want to say I'm sorry if my voice sounds a little bit crackly or weak. I have some sort of plague. I don't know if it's the plague yet, but so my voice is what it is for right now, and I apologize for that. But we're going to get going into our first story. All right, this first story, the subject line of the email just says, "Buckle up." I started jumping after 3 years of saddle seat and transferred to a new barn. After 2 years of jumping, I followed the barn owner to a new facility. Turns out she ditched her sick spouse overnight and took everything. I rode with her for 8 months before going back and don't regret it to this day. She has too many horses and not enough stalls, and she used to tie the horses up in the arena facing the wall, and then after I left, some of her students started targeting me on social media. That's it, just a few sentences. But I think they did a good job of summing up a lot of people, or what a lot of people have experienced. I've been to a lot of boarding or lesson barns that have way too many horses and I think don't have time to properly train or spend time with all the horses they have, so they resort to things like tying them up in the arena all day with their head up until they're tired, or lunging the snot out of them, or things like that. So I have seen that even in big show barns. I've seen people do that, and I'm just like, is that, like, horses are designed to be running around outside, like, hanging out, not being tied to the wall for 8 hours a day. That's ridiculous. I remember being in one barn where in the morning, really, really early, the trainer would ride all the horses, like, super duper early, and then while the trainer was riding, the grooms would be cleaning the stalls, and I don't know why they did this, but the horses never got any turnout, mind you. They got ridden once a day and that was it. And the grooms, like, would clean the stall, and then when they were done cleaning the stall, they would put the horses hay and grain in for, like, their evening feeding. And then, so the horse didn't eat the grain for their evening feeding, they tied them up to the wall, like, in the back corner all day. I'm just like, what can you imagine being tied up in a corner for like 6 hours, 8 hours, like, all, what's the purpose of that? Why would you treat your animal like that? How hard is it to just, I mean, if you want to do all the feedings, fine, but just put the bucket outside the stall and put a cover on it. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. And then I'm like, so the horse gets no hay and no water, I guess, all day. That doesn't make any sense to me, but hopefully this person found a better barn situation. The subject line of this one is horse camp drama. My sister and I used to be in 4-H. Our county has a horse camp consisting of 4 or 5 clubs, and everyone who does horse in 4-H has a chance to go, as well as a couple other people from different counties. There were 4 leaders there, one who is incredibly rude and has a bad reputation in the horse world. Then there are people that are there to teach us. One is for Western, who's a very well-known judge where I live, and one is for English, but I don't remember their name. My sister was using a Tom Thumb bit. I'm not saying I like Tom Thumb bits, I'm just saying that's what my sister was using. The Tom Thumb bits are legal in the 4-H according to the rules, and in the rules they don't state that the bit is not allowed, and it's fine to use. I think they follow the same rules for AQHA. The way the horse camp works is that you bring your horse on Sunday. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday are the days you have the lesson twice a day. Friday is a practice day where they do a mock show and play games and get your horse ready for a show on Saturday. The leader that is rude told my sister Thursday afternoon that the bit she was using wasn't allowed and the bit should never have been put in a horse's mouth. I agree to a certain extent, but I was also like 7. The trainer said she had to get another bit, specifically a bit that my sister had tried with her horse and it didn't work. He had been going best in a Tom Thumb. The person told her that she needs to get this specific bit or she wouldn't be able to complete the project or compete in the show. My sister obviously wanted to complete her project, so they went and bought this bit. They only were able to ride in the bit once before the show, and not to mention they'd already tried that bit before and knew it didn't work. Even the judge and one of the other leaders said that it was fine. So the next year, one of the leaders went looking through the book, which has all of the bits they are allowed to use. She found it, and even with proof, the same leader did the same thing the next year. We have since moved counties, which we were luckily able to do, so we don't have to deal with that person again. There were multiple other things wrong with that camp, like the barns closed at 6. Keep in mind, there were lessons that lasted until 5:45, and then they had a meeting, and they still expected you to have the stall almost spotless at the end of the day. There was no way I could have cleaned the stall before the lesson because we had a lecture. Also, my horse had no hay because my horse mixes his hay in his stall, and I usually use a hay net so that doesn't happen, but they told me I wasn't allowed to use a hay net. One year, someone also stole a couple of hay bales, and I'm very prepared when it comes to that stuff, and I had the exact amount of hay I needed for that week, but someone stole it, and by the time I realized it, I had to call my mom to get more hay, and we lived 40 minutes away. This was about an hour or hour and a half before the barns closed for the night. Basically, my horse was stuck with no hay for the night, and they wouldn't let me go in to give my horse any hay. Yikes. So I never did 4-H. And if you're not familiar, 4-H is like a youth organization or a collection of youth organizations that are kind of agricultural related usually. So you can show all different kinds of animals. I'm pretty sure they have like cooking and sewing and like that kind of stuff. It's just different youth organizations that are kind of generally associated to agriculture or skills like that. So anyway, I never did 4-H as a kid. I didn't really show a whole lot when I was really young because I didn't have a horse of my own and I was just kind of like a weekly lesson kid. But I've heard a lot of people who did 4-H with horses have really poor experiences. And I'm not saying that 4-H is a bad like thing to get involved in. I think it's a great thing. And I've known people who have gotten really, really cool opportunities from being involved in 4-H and really liked it. But I think just horse camps in general, I mean, I've never heard of a positive experience at horse camp. Like, there's always just something. I mean, I went to horse camp when I was a kid, and it was really expensive. It was like a week long, and it was at a YMCA camp, and I was just like stoked. I was so excited to go, and I like begged for it. And I think I basically, like, my family pooled money for my birthday to, like, send me to this camp. And I had a great time, and, like, I'm super grateful that my family did that for me and sent me. But in retrospect, I'm like, the horses were so poorly cared for, and they were, like, the last priority. Like, those horses were worth their weight in gold for what they put up with. I remember there was one horse. I had been riding for quite a while at that point. I was in, like, middle school, but I wasn't the kind of kid that was gonna like tell an adult that they were doing something wrong or like confront an adult when they see them doing something wrong to a horse. Like, I just wasn't that kind of kid. And so I remember there was this horse who, I want to say he had Cushing's, and so he was on this like really strict diet, and he must have had some other health problems too, but I remember he had Cushing's because it was like the middle of the summer and he had a full winter coat. And I remember asking, like, oh, how come he's not, like, clipped? Because he's just sweating profusely. Like, he's obviously hot, and they're using him in lessons all day. And they're like, oh, well, we tried, but it broke the clippers. This poor horse is, like, just standing there drenched in sweat because he has all this hair. Get somebody to come out with some sheep shears or something. Believe me, I have a horse that's super woolly, too, and I clip him so that he's not sweating. But anyway, this horse, because he was on this strict diet, and all the horses were Like, I'm not going to say they were emaciated. It wasn't to that degree. They just weren't well cared for. And they didn't have a lot of hay or whatever. The camp counselors would get us all lined up in the barn with our horses, and then we would all lead our horses out to the little arena that was next to the barn, and you follow this little dirt path, and it was obviously flanked by grass on both sides. And I don't remember if I was leading the horse or somebody else was, but I remember being right there. And so as soon as we get out to where the grass is, this horse, who's super food restricted, puts his head down to try to eat grass. Like, obviously, he's a horse. That's what they do. They see grass and they want to eat it. And of course, the young kid who was leading the horse couldn't get his head up. And the camp counselor who was with the kid couldn't get his head up. And this other camp counselor comes over and tries to, mind you, using the bit, tries to yank on his mouth to get his head up. And when he wouldn't pick his head up, she kicked him in the mouth hard. She's like, "Oh, well, that's the only way you can get a horse to listen to you." And I was just like, you just kicked a horse in the mouth in front of 30 young kids. And obviously, I was too young to think, oh, I should do something about this, because I was just like horrified. But also, you're kind of in a point where, kind of like this person was with your 4-H leader, like if you're a kid, at what point can you really do anything? Because if they're your superior, if you try to say anything to them or argue with them, even if you're right, you're probably going to get in trouble. So is it really worth it? So anyway, I'm glad that that person was able to move to another county and that their horse is okay. And like this person said, they're not saying that a Tom Thumb bit is like the best choice in general, but if that's what someone's horse is going in and they're a child, and you're about to put them, well, first of all, you're already in a new situation because you're at this horse camp. But then you're gonna have this like show basically, and you wanna change someone's bit out the day before. That's just irresponsible in general. Even if you don't like Tom Thumb bits, if the horse is being safe and the kid is riding fine, just make the recommendation and let them deal with that at home or with their trainer or whatever. That's not something that you change last minute. And I've seen where people change bits last minute at shows because of bit rules. And it's just a nightmare. I remember there was a show that I was at, and it was a pleasure show. And so, in the Western pleasure classes, you have to, if your horse is older than usually 5, they have to go in like a shanked curb bit. And these people showed up, and they were, I think, the type of people who probably just bought a horse because they had some land and they didn't have a lot of formal training, and you could tell, but they wanted to try showing, which is great. And I'm glad that they were able to get out and experience it. But they were about to go in the arena for a Western pleasure class or horsemanship or something, and the judge said, "You can't use those bits in here. You'll be disqualified." Like, obviously you can go in the arena and ride if you want, but you'll get DQ'd because you have to follow the bit rules. And so I remember this woman that I knew saw this happening, and she was like, "Well, I have extra bits and bridles in my trailer. Do you want a legal bridle setup?" And of course, these poor people who probably just bought the first bridle they saw at Tractor Supply or something. They were just doing the best with what they had, you know? And so when someone's in your face, like, "Oh, do you want this bit or that bit?" you don't have any idea. And so they just, I guess, just picked one and went in the arena, and their horses were just like out of control, and it was incredibly dangerous, and it was just a bad situation. And I don't know that the horses would have been any better in the bits that the people came with. But it's just like, why, when you're already in a not necessarily stressful situation, but a new situation, would you want to make all these changes? Just a bad idea. I've got a lot of stories of stuff that I've seen at horse shows that was wild. But let's move on to the next story. So this just says Horse World story. This has several stories, so we'll just go from the top. In June of 2020, my grandfather passed, and my grandmother had to take over the barn we owned. It's a decent size operation, 23 stalls and a small outdoor arena, and then an even smaller indoor arena, some pastures, and a tack room. He passed unexpectedly, and luckily my trainers at the time, we'll call them Deborah and Ron, were able to step up and help with the management portion of things so my grandmother could get a job and try to make some money, since my grandfather had been the primary source of income. The barn didn't make much of a profit due to bad management and bad boarders. Deborah and Ron had been running it pretty well, and so we didn't have to sell as early as we thought we would. However, Deborah and Ron owned a separate business that they had to run, and it involved them not being able to spend as much time at the barn, and then they ended up just leaving, and they lied to a lot of people, and it turns out they were actually wanted for breaking multiple federal laws which involved their other business. So then it started going downhill again. New boarders came in, and the woman, we'll call Kayla, ended up being my new trainer for a while and helped maintain the barn. Her and her husband did a lot of stablehand type work, like mucking stalls, feeding horses, turning out, etc. It was going smoothly for a while until June of 2021. My grandmother ended up selling the facility and didn't tell Kayla for a decent amount of time until she ended up finding out due to the fact that we live in a small town and people talk. So they got mad and Kayla and the other two people, totaling 5 horses, left the barn and started spreading rumors about me, and I had nothing to do with anything. Then, by the end of summer, we had 4 of our horses left, when at the same time the previous year we had 11. At the county fair, which I show at, she tried to sell the horses I was showing behind my back. She also tried to sell our truck and trailer that same week, which means we would have had no way of getting home from the fair. Now that we're trying to get ownership of my 4 horses, she's lying to everyone and telling many people different stories and blaming everything on me. I feel like a lot of stories surround poor management. And I am not surprised by that because, in my opinion, a lot of people start farms or barns or lesson programs or whatever because they really like horses, not because they're good business people. And most barns that I've seen fail because, again, there's not a good sense of how to run a good business, not because people don't love the horses enough. And I see that a lot on, especially these really big farms, they're not running them like a farm. I mean, if you go talk to a lot of farmers, like people who are raising crops or livestock or whatever, they have proper accounting. They have, you know, they're managing their income and their profit and loss and things like that. But a lot of horse barns, I see just kind of like running on hopes and dreams, and which is fine until you have things like this where horse ownership was up in the air and somebody else just kind of took over, and it's just a bad idea. All right, a lot of the stories that are in here, this person sent multiple stories. A lot of them are pretty short, so I'm going to leave them out for now. This one just says drama. So my old barn was a very fancy lesson barn. There were a lot of fancy jumper and dressage horses, and there was this one girl who we'll call Rebecca. Rebecca had a very nice dressage horse, and she came from a filthy rich family. There was another girl who did lessons for kids on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays. The kids were very well behaved and we never had anything bad happen with the kids. But Rebecca had a huge problem with that, even though when she was discussing this with everyone, she said it's okay. She would yell at the kids every time they made even the slightest noise around her horse, even though the horse wasn't spooky or anything. And one day, I guess Rebecca came up with an amazing idea and got the girl kicked out. I just don't get why people can't leave each other alone. Like, genuinely, I've been at barns where people are trying to get each other kicked out or whatever, and I'm like, why? Just show up and ride your horse or do whatever you're gonna do and leave everybody alone. And that's why I love my barn, because it's not a big fancy riding barn. We don't have like all these, you know, it's just a farm where the horses live, but nobody bothers each other. Like, I could go to the barn and not see anybody. It's great. Like, I would happily give up having a big fancy arena for being left alone. And maybe that's me being an introvert, but I also feel like I can actually focus on what I want to do with my horses and not worry about if people are over here whispering about me or like trying to sabotage me. I'm a grown-ass woman. I don't have time for that. Like, some people act like children no matter how old they are. Okay, I think we're gonna do one more and then we will move along for today. It's gonna be a shorter episode today, but I know people kind of have a love-hate relationship with these types of episodes. Some people really like them and other people can't stand them. But for me, it's a nice break because I'm just reading emails, basically. I don't have to go and research a whole story, so it gives me a little bit of break, and especially since I'm not feeling well, this is kind of a nice break for me, and if people aren't really a big fan of these, then that's totally fine, and I'll see you next time. The next one I'm working on is more of a true crime one, which is the true crime is kind of what draws a lot of people to my podcast, but I also need to break them up because some of them, first of all, require a lot of research. Like, I spent hours and hours and hours putting those episodes together, and I'm a full-time grad student, and I don't have hours and hours and hours to spend every week, so sometimes it takes me a few weeks. And a lot of them are older stories, and I don't know if that stuff just doesn't happen as frequently anymore or if it's better covered up now. So it's a lot of sifting through, like, newspaper articles or relying on someone else already having done all that. So those true crime are also my favorite, but they just take a little bit longer. And to be honest with you, a lot of them are very similar. A lot of them are like insurance fraud and stuff like that. So I'm kind of like, well, how many insurance fraud stories do people want to listen to if they're all kind of the same? So that's why I kind of just go for anything that's in the dark side of the horse industry, even though true crime is my favorite to cover. So anyway, I'm going to start reading through these stories. There's actually 5 within this email, so I'll read through them and then I'll decide which ones to leave in. Story number 1. I grew up riding at this one barn from the age of 6 to 14 years old. The trainer there became like a second mom to me. I used to get picked up from school every day and dropped off at the school where she worked. She was a teacher at a public school, and I was at a local Catholic school. We were so close, she even called me her daughter. I spent weeks during the summer spending the night at her place and riding and working and having a general ball. Fast forward to when I had just turned 14. I spent the week with my aunt in Texas. My aunt had a friend who was a trainer and breeder of FEI dressage horses. I had a blast that week. I learned a ton and came home fired up to get better at dressage. I started coming out 4 times a week to ride my lease horse and was working towards having him actually on the bit and moving over his back. This angered my trainer, who herself had never competed past training level and had no idea how to take me farther. Rather than be honest and tell me that she had taken me as far as she could, she told me I wasn't allowed to ride my lease horse anymore. So I left and borrowed my friend's 23-year-old mare and went to Pony Club Nationals in training level dressage. When I came back, my trainer was awful to me. She gave me the silent treatment and said awful things, I still don't know exactly what, to my mom. So we officially left her barn for good. This happens so much. I have seen so many barns or trainers purposefully hold their students at a certain level so that they'll never leave. One thing I loved about the barn where I taught was we were very clear about the fact that we were a beginner lesson barn. If you want to barrel race or jump 3 feet or show FEI level dressage, like, that's great, but we can get you your basics and then you go move on to that other trainer. I can give you the basics of horsemanship and walk, trot, canter, Western English, whatever, and we can get you this really nice solid foundation, and then if you want, you can go move on to other things. Some people don't. Some people, they just want to come ride a horse once a week and that's what they want to do and they're happy with that and that's great. But some people want to move on to bigger and better things and that's fine. We had a height limit for jumping, which was 2 feet. So I could get people started over fences. And then once they were really, really good, you know, at the basics, if they wanted to jump, they either needed to buy their own horse or go move on to a lesson barn or a jumping barn. And I really liked that because it was sad when students moved on to a different trainer or whatever, but it was also exciting because I was like, I was able to give them that foundation and then hand them off. And I would get really good feedback from people who got my students who, you know, like I had done all this foundation work and they could just get this, you know, clean slate, ready to go person that they were going to teach to do whatever it is that they wanted to do. And I also made sure that my students had horsemanship skills. Like, some barns don't ever teach them how to catch a horse or groom a horse or tack up a horse or treat injuries or clean stalls. You know, like, I tried to make sure that, depending on the student, obviously everybody's different, that they got that knowledge. Because if you go move on to a higher level barn where they're going to say, okay, well, there's your horse out there, go catch it, bring it in, tack it up, groom it, all by yourself and then meet me in the arena and you don't know how to do that, they're going to be like, well, why not? And I got a lot of flack on TikTok when I talked about that, how you don't get to just show up to lessons with me to a tacked up horse and go ride. Because there's so much more to riding than just jumping on and riding. But I think, again, like I said, a lot of barns do that because, well, if you don't have all those horsemanship skills, you're not going to be able to go be a working student for somebody. You're not going to be able to go buy your own horse. You're going to always be reliant on that barn to do those things for you. And I didn't want that. Also, like, it's not my job to groom and tack your horse if you're capable. Obviously, I had certain students who had mobility limitations or couldn't lift a saddle or whatever, and I have no problem helping, but like, you should be empowered to do those things on your own. And being familiar with the horse on the ground, with their anatomy and the way they move and their body language, that will make you a better rider. Like, all those things are so important, but I think people don't teach them on purpose because they want to hold riders back, which sounds like is what happened to this person. All right, story number two from this person. After about 4 months of driving 2 hours to Louisiana to a new trainer, I was gifted a 4-year-old off-the-track thoroughbred. She was a hot mess to say the least and had been returned to that second trainer by a different girl because she was dangerous. I slowly built her trust and a year later was running novice eventing with her. Good for you. I posted a picture on Facebook of us jumping, very much over-jumping a jump, in a bitless bridle. The mare was young and still learning, and that's why she over-jumped. I was very proud of myself because she was going cross-country in a bitless bridle. A different trainer who teaches Hunter Jumper commented on how much my mare was over-jumping and that I was going to die. I was snarky back, and then she went on slamming me on her personal page and cyber-bullied me. Mind you, I was 15 and she was an adult in her 40s. My new trainers backed me up, and I never took a clinic from that Hunter Jumper lady again. Reading this story enraged me because I have had this happen to me. We did not have a bunch of money for me to have a fancy horse as a teenager, and when I bought my thoroughbred, like, he's a great horse, but he's not, you know, some super fancy trained animal. Like, I took him to a show and he ran around and jumped like a gazelle because he had never done it before. And I was like, well, how am I supposed to, like, he jumps at home, but the only way to get him more comfortable jumping other places is to take him other places. So why am I getting so much flack from all these trainers? Like, okay, that's great that your horses just show up broke and quiet, but I'm still working on that and I have to get him out to see things to get him to be okay with it, you know? So it's like, I don't get where grown adults get off bashing actual children. And I had people do that to me too, and it was like, if I wanted your opinion, I would ask. And I couldn't afford a trainer when I was young. I had to choose between lessons or owning a horse. I didn't have a fancy trainer to come train my horse for me and then me ride off into the sunset. Like, it was messy for a while. It really was. And that's how I learned. And I did a lot of things wrong, but like, for grown adults to bash me, it's one thing if you want to help me, if you want to be like, hey, I noticed that, you know, your bit doesn't really fit, but I have one you could borrow if you want, you know, like, there's a way to approach people and say, like, here's a tip. But if you're just going to give someone unsolicited advice in a way that bashes them and then to cyberbully them, there's no point. Because if you're going to be rude, no person, when they're getting bashed, is going to be like, oh my god, you're so right, I should whatever. You're just going to hurt their feelings and probably send them on the defense. And that's not going to make them change what they're doing. Either be nice or shut your mouth. If your input was desired, it would be requested. Honestly. If you're a trainer, right, that's your job, is getting paid to train horses or train people to ride or whatever. If that's the case, why are you giving your input away for free? Like, if your input and advice is so valuable that you charge for it, why are you just posting that stuff for free on the internet? It's one thing if someone asks for advice and you're willing to give out free advice, but for you to just go around handing it out for free, why? I mean, if I owned a tack shop, well, I charge for the tack that I have. I'm not just going to go around handing out free saddles and bridles. that's my business, you know? Like, if you want that, you can pay for it. So I don't know why traders do that. I don't know. All right, I think I'm going to read this next one, and then that'll be the last one for today. This is all from the same person. This is their third story. When I graduated high school, I moved to Texas for college, and my parents said I was on my own to pay for horse expenses. I couldn't afford both a horse and college, so I sold my mare to pay for my semester at school. I sold her to a woman I thought was a friend in California. She promised me she wouldn't sell her unless I wanted her back one day. She kept telling me she had a forever home and she'd never let anything happen to her. Well, months later, she was texting me saying her daughter was scared of the mare I used to take cross-country bitless, and offered her back to me. I still couldn't afford her. Broke college kid. I begged her not to sell her since she had promised a forever home. She said she was too dangerous and sold her. She said she would keep track of her for me. She did not keep track because the mare was then passed from barn to barn at least four times. I was devastated. I tried my best to keep track of her, hoping I could buy her back, but I lost track of her. I hear about this happening literally all the time, and some people have, they'll have like a buyback contract or clause or whatever, but as far as I know, they're not legally binding. But when you sell a horse, you relinquish all rights to that animal. And that's hard. That sucks. If you're in a position where you can't keep your animal and you might love that animal with all your heart, but if you can't afford it, what are you supposed to do? You know? And so there's a lot of people who are like, oh, well, you know, I would do anything to keep my animal. It's like, yeah, we all would, but at some point you don't have a choice, right? And so this person did what she thought was best for her horse and gave her to somebody who could afford to take care of her and ended up losing track of her. And that's really, really sad. And I feel for her. When I started college, I went to school part-time and I chose to go to a local community college, and that allowed me to stay near my horses and keep my horses. And then I ended up being able to go to a university that was close to my horses, and it all worked out for me. But that's a lot of luck and privilege, because I had a parent who was supporting me partially as well. So not everybody has all those privileges, right? But, you know, we all try to be as flexible as we can and have the best intentions. But at least I hope that because this horse was relatively young and healthy, from what I can tell, the horse ended up in a good home. But I see a lot of people who have older horses and they've got a horse who's in their 20s and not really rideable, and they're like, well, I can't ride him anymore, so I'm going to sell them. And then they act all horrified when the horse ends up in an auction pen. And it's like, well, what did you think was going to happen? Did you think someone else, if you're not willing to take care of a horse that can't do anything for you, a horse that you love and have an attachment to and have ridden, why would you expect somebody else to do that when that person owes that horse nothing, you know? And I mean, I've always said both of my horses could go lame tomorrow or be crippled tomorrow and be unrideable. And I can't afford another horse. Two is my max. Two is too many, but two is my max. And if they were both unrideable tomorrow, I would never put my wants and needs for riding above them being taken care of. If I had to not ride for the rest of their lives, I mean, I would find a way, right? I would find somebody who needed horses worked, or I have friends with horses or whatever that I could ride. But I had to come to this point where I was selfless enough to say, I am never going to put my horse in a situation where their safety's not guaranteed. And if they got to a point where some of these horses are that I see on Facebook or whatever, where people are like, oh, well, they've got really bad arthritis and they've got this and that and they're on all these maintenance meds, but I just need to rehome them to someone who can just, you know, keep them for the rest of their life. And it's like, who has the money for that? Like, who has the money to just take in this horse with all these needs who can't be ridden and just hang on to it till it dies? Like, wouldn't you be better off, like, euthanizing them on a good day and making sure that they never end up in a bad situation? And it, I mean, I've gone off on a tangent. This isn't related anymore to the story. Like, this person was doing what they thought was best for their horse. But my point stands about, like, you know, if you've got this old horse that you just think you're going to rehome and they're going to be fine, you have no rights anymore to that horse. You don't have a buyback. You don't have, nobody has the obligation to tell you where the horse is or what they do with it. And both people that I've bought my horses from, I'm friends with on Facebook, and like, so they can see, you know, what's going on with the horses that I bought from them, but I don't owe them that, right? Like, I own the horses, so if I wanted to both send them both to an auction tomorrow, I could. I never would. They're with me for the rest of their lives, but it's just hard when you want to do the best by your animal and then other people screw you over too, so it's kind of a lose-lose situation. But anyway, that's where we're going to end it for today. If you have a story to submit, please email it to me at spottedbay@gmail.com or submit it on spottedbay.com in my contact form, but please leave out all the personal info and just leave behind the juicy details. Make sure to subscribe if you like this podcast, or follow depending on where you listen, and share it with your friends. Also, make sure to come hang out with us on social media. You can find us at Spotted Bay Productions on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, and YouTube, all at the same name. And I will catch you guys next week. Thanks for listening.